First, let's face it. I know you clicked on this episode because you are confused as to why today's question is, what is a human? Yes, that is obviously a weird question. Yes, it is obviously the question. And yes, we are planning on seriously and scientifically answering what a human is. It is certainly on the unorthodox side of a science channel, but I consider it quite necessary. Humanity's upbringing, both evolutionary and societally, combines multitudes of scientific concepts, specifically evolution and specifically biology, and sets them in the foreground. When we venture into our species origins, we engage in evolution, ecology, astronomy, human geography, agriculture, philosophy, psychology, community ecology, physiology, among many other fields. We are obviously not discussing every single one of those fields today, but you know the gist. For most other animals, we could venture into a majority of these fields as well, and we would likely find intriguing information surrounding the upbringing of those species as well. But the difference with covering the upbringing of humanity is that you can combine both the physical or philosophical and geographical sciences with the biological and environmental or even the astronomical sciences. Also, not to mention the fact that we are, at least a vast majority of us that are watching this episode or that are listening to this episode or are making it, are likely Homo sapiens. So it only makes sense that we delve into our own personal upbringings. Like, let's ask questions like, from where did we originate? How did we develop highly organized societies and civilizations? From what species did we diverge? What made humans different from their ape relatives and ancestors? What traits about humans are most unique and invigorating? These questions, and of course many more, will be answered in today's episode, where we explore the birth of our genus, Homo, and the birth of our species, the Homo sapien. We're discussing more than just the Homo and the sapien. We're going to discuss the hominid and also the... Well, the hominid is still... The hominid and the primate. In short, the human, lesser known as the hobo... Not the hippo, not the Homo, not the hopo. Well, definitely the Homo. The Homo sapien is a highly intelligent primate and one of the few primates to have bipedal locomotion, pretty much the only one, which is characterized by walking with two rather than four appendages. Most animals that have ever existed, pretty much all of them, not all of them, not quite all of them, but a vast majority of animals that have ever existed, have quadrupedal locomotion. I'm just saying it that way. We have bipedal, though, so obviously that's very unique. The sapien is the only extant, in meaning the only surviving and currently living species of the subtribe. Oh, please say that I don't get this wrong. Australopithecine, which donned the genus Homo. The Homo sapien is the only living species in the genus of Homo, and the species has gone on to forming sophisticated and highly organized societies, creating semi-advanced technology, medicine, and living standards. I live in the United States, so I know pretty much those pretty well. And also diverging from a normal ape's nomadic lifestyle to now a sedentary lifestyle. The human, along with chimpanzees, gorillas, and orangutans, all of whom share over 95% of their genes with one another, specifically 99%, 95 to 99%, and 97% respectively, make up the family Hominidae, also known as the great apes. So we are a great ape. We are a species of the great apes. The species in the hominids are disputed, but they have recently taken on some of the great apes. It was recently it's been changing. It's obviously altered itself over time, but as we've discovered that we're more related to chimpanzees and other apes than we had previously thought, we've become pretty much in the same family as the other great apes. The hominids used to just be merely confined to the Homo genus, basically, specifically just like the first humans all the way to the present humans, so like Neanderthals, Homo erectus, etc. But yeah, that's basically what it is, and now it's changed into a more great apes existence. Hominidae was originally classified as categorizing humans and their evolutionary ancestors into the family, But that has, of course, changed as more data on the evolution of primates is detailed. I could have just said it that way, but I decided to go off on a tangent. The chimpanzees and the humans are the weakest of the great apes, with gorillas and orangutans being far stronger. The humans are the weakest of the great apes. The chimpanzees are still 4 times stronger than us, but we're not going to talk about that. So seriously, if I were you, if you really want to be the best at something in the world, go after something that deals with your brain, because the only way you're going to be able to be the strongest is if you're the strongest in the brain, because that's all we have. We don't have height, we don't have strength, we don't have eyesight, we don't have ears, we have nothing. We don't even have good smell, so we have nothing except for a good brain. That's it. As with our ape relatives, though, we too have an origin. Before we discuss the origin of the human species, we'll discuss the origins of both the primates and the apes, the great apes, and the hominids. And then we'll discuss the origin of the genus Homo and the actual origin of the Homo sapien, which is our existence. The origin of the primate order is basically a biological classification, itself occurred much further in the distant past than did the origins of the hominids and the great apes. But still, in astronomical terms, it's like a blink of an eye, literally. It's probably about a day on the cosmic calendar, I assume. Well, maybe not quite a day. Well, just a little bit more than a day. I think it's probably something like day and a half. The earliest detected primates evolved into such primates around 55 million years ago, around the same time that many other mammalian orders, specifically like Carnivora, for example, which contains both the Felidae and the Canidae, or the cats and the dogs. Basically, the mammalian orders, those are families, but a mammalian order, for example, would be Carnivora. It's basically a carnivore. Humans are not carnivores. Apes are not carnivores. Primates are not carnivores. So that's basically what it is. So the last time we had the last common ancestor we have with the carnivores is at least 55 million years ago, if I'm getting this correct. The time in which many of the mammalian orders arose is known as the Eocene Epoch, encapsulating the time from 55.8 million years ago to 33.9 million years ago. Considering the fact that 55 million years ago, the tectonic plates of Earth were significantly different than they are now, it is difficult to point out an exact origin of these early primates, but fossilized remains of the earliest of these apes have been found in North America, Europe, and Asia. Many other places as well have found ones that are later on, but not quite obviously as old as 55 million years. It is believed that these mammals evolved partly because of the significant increase, literally the doubling, of the amount of oxygen in the atmosphere, which obviously can foster evolutionary development of larger animals, as we saw in the Cambrian explosion, at least presumably. When they mean primates being large, they mean like large as like a rodent. Like, we talk about the dinosaurs being insanely massive. Yes, they were big. They were insanely large compared to any animals that exist now. But the early primates, oh no, they were not tall. They were not big at all. They were rodents. They were like rats. They were literal rats. That is our ancestor. We are rodents. So that's reassuring. The primates really evolved later into the first apes and monkeys. This was much later on, basically in Africa around 30 million years ago, during what is known as the Oligocene Epoch, which is characterized by a gap in the primate fossil record. Even so, it is widely believed that the New World monkeys evolved around 30 million years ago during the Oligocene Epoch, as I said. It is also believed that through a migration route known as the Great Rift Valley, these early apes migrated to Africa, and that is where we are from. It is also known that earlier primates traveled to Africa around 40 million years ago. Finally, in the Miocene Epoch, in a specific portion of the epoch around 14 to 16 million years ago, the first apes were believed to have evolved from their primates. Basically, yeah, and this happened almost exclusively in Africa. The great apes derive from a very specific point on Earth, as is shown in, by fossil records. These records purport that the great apes originate from Africa, notably Ethiopia, and sporadically Kenya. The origins of the hominids appear to be from an ultra-specific region of Ethiopia known as the Afar Desert in Ethiopia. And this Afar Desert is where the first human ancestors of the Homo sapien arose. That's basically all the information there is needed for that. So let's get into the most important part. So this is the, basically this is the part about the hominids. Now we're getting into the, basically the first humans, not quite the Homo sapien, but back into the earliest humans, the, Australocenic humanoids. The earliest species of humans originated in Africa around 6 million years ago, which is still pretty long ago. The humans remained confined to Africa for millions of years into the future, but because of their natural nomadicy as apes and primates, they eventually migrated to other parts of the world, notably Asia and Europe. It wasn't really until extremely recently that humans migrated to the Africa or to the Americas, not the Africas, really like literally 1,000 years ago. It is generally believed that there have been between 15 to 20 human species since the dawn of the genus, but a majority of these human species had no living descendants. Obviously one of them had to, obviously some of them had to, because Homo sapiens and humans would not exist if none of them had any living descendants. But yeah, there's currently one, literally only one human species that remains alive or extant to this day. The Homo sapien, we know what the Homo sapien is. It's often known as the modern human, which is extremely new in astronomical and evolutionary timelines. Obviously, we are one of the younger species in existence. Kind of humbling that we are still very, very, very young on the cosmic calendar and on the earthly calendar. The modern human, or the Homo sapien, first originated in Eastern Africa around 200,000 years ago. Again, in that Afar Desert, is it is believed where their ancestors may have originated, and even quite possibly humans themselves, the Homo sapien themselves. Basically, they originated in Africa around 200,000 years ago, and they quickly, again in astronomical terms, crossed the savannas and the steppes, and traveled the world in search of a better place and a new beginning. Around 33,000 years ago, the Clovis people, northern Asian human tribes specifically, gathered their belongings and crossed the Bering Land Bridge, which was basically a land bridge that existed between Alaska and Russia, present-day Alaska. And it was cold, but they were able to make it. This is because of lower sea level, pretty much. I mean, this is in the height of an ice age. 40,000 years ago, basically the height of an ice age. The last ice age didn't end until, like, wasn't it like 14,000 years ago? So, yeah, this was back in 33,000 years ago. So we were in like not quite the height, but there was still an ice age. At this point, once the Clovis people arrived on Earth, in North America, pretty much every continent, every major continent, because they went pretty quickly to South America, pretty much every continent in the world, save Antarctica, was occupied by the Homo sapien. So think about this. It only took us until 33,000 years ago to actually make it to North America. It's interesting and humbling in a way. Like, we have not been here for long. We have not been here for long at all. Even so, it wouldn't be until around 1,000 years ago that there were any contact with people of the Americas. I'm saying 1,000 years ago because there's a common belief that Christopher Columbus was the first person to cross the Atlantic and find the Native Americans, and find America, find North America. But actually, that is not true. Leif Erikson, I'm sure you know what his name is. I'm sure you recognize him now that you hear it. He was a Viking, and he did so. He went to North America, specifically one of the more northern regions, like New England, and then the other new right above that. I'm not really educated on my Canadian territories. Basically, Nova Scotia. There you go. And Basically, he was in that region, but this was 500 years, a half a millennium before Christopher Columbus traveled the ocean blue across to the Anu Island. Basically, it took that long. Like, it was 500 years later, and yet we still regard Christopher Columbus as, like, this hero of exploration, but yet Leif Erikson did it 500 years before him and got almost no credit. Even though it makes sense because Leif Erikson's voyage is still relatively undocumented, but is almost exclusively believed by historians that Christopher Columbus was not the first to cross the ocean blue and establish a base in the Caribbean, establish a base in the Americas. So, being that humans are in the family of hominids, they represent the most similarities with their great ape relatives, notably, obviously, the chimpanzees and the gorillas. Of the apes, the ones with the greatest similarities towards humans include the chimpanzees, with 98.7% of their DNA being shared with humans, and bonobos, a close relative of the chimpanzees, who also share 98.7% of their DNA with humans. I assume that one thing that comes to your mind when you hear of our genetic similarities with chimpanzees and bonobos is how intelligent those apes are, because we are insanely intelligent humans. As humans, we are basically granted the greatest intelligence, arguably, of any earthbound organism. We're not even earthbound, so that should say another thing. But yeah, so it's obvious that our close relatives are going to be smart as well, and they are very smart. Chimpanzees and bonobos, too, are very highly intelligent. All the other apes are. Like, look at the monkeys. The monkeys are really smart. They're basically among the most intelligent species on the planet. These species are characterized by using advanced tools, maybe not quite quantum computers, but they can still innovate pretty well. And they also use highly intelligent and sophisticated communication, complex and orderly societies. You'll see that if you watch videos about chimpanzees, and powerful problem-solving abilities. It can be said that if similar mutations are to occur on chimpanzees and bonobos, and if humans are to go extinct, chimpanzees and bonobos could become the next highly intelligent species to achieve agriculture and civilization. It is certainly within the realm of possibility that humans are not the last intelligent species on the planet to arise. And actually, I am almost convinced that they are not. Chimpanzees are extremely intelligent, same with bonobos, same with gorillas. And it wouldn't be surprising if, like, we were to leave or go extinct and it would turn into a planet of the apes. It already is the planet of the apes because we, too, are apes ourselves. So I would be completely okay with the planet of the apes. It already is the planet of the apes where the humans live, so I'd be okay with either, to be honest. Yeah. To understand and explain the genetic and physical anomalies in humans, I went to an article and I stumbled upon an article by Live Science, I always get that wrong, named The Top Things That Make Humans Special. Yeah, that's basically what it is. The Top Things That Make Humans Special. First, we are not special, but either way, this article contains some interesting traits of humans that are almost exclusive to humans themselves. Here's some notable traits of humans that make them unique from their ape relatives. First of all, the first one is the fact that we have a larynx, which is also known as the voice box. It is removed when someone smokes too many cigarettes in their lives. Do not smoke, kids. It is basically an evolutionary trait exclusive to humans that evolved in submodern humans around 350,000 years ago. This is not a Homo sapien quite yet, but getting there. This trait allowed for humans to articulate and complicate their communication into sounds and words that we all know today. Without the larynx, we would not be able to speak an articulate language at all, let alone say words like indefatigable and transcendentalism. Or like, let's see, malachite. Like, there are a billion words. Yankee candle. I'm just looking at a Yankee candle. But yeah, Another one is the fact that we have interesting locomotion tactics. While many of our ape relatives and ancestors utilize four-legged locomotion, us humans utilize bipedal locomotion, or movement with only two limbs. This particular trait is not only an evolutionary anomaly, but also an incredible and superior physical trait, though obviously a trade-off. While humans are obviously not as fast as many other animals, even some of their close relatives, but that is disputed because earlier humans could run 40 miles per hour, they are characterized by exerting an unusual and incredible level of endurance. When our ancestors wandered through the savannas and the steppes of England, Africa, we obtained our food by running faster animals to death. We would run dozens of miles until our prey were exhausted, and then we would kill. Humans are exceptionally weak, basically the weakest of the great apes by a mile, and one of the weaker of the large mammals, yet we require more energy than almost any other animal on the planet. This is a direct result of our brains, so obviously it doesn't seem like our brains are much of any evolutionary trait, like any really strong, important evolutionary trait, but actually it is, surprisingly enough. And in a way, it is because of the brain that it's an evolutionary trait that is strong and important. But obviously because of this, to kill and survive, we must use methods that cater to our greatest traits. And endurance is pretty much that. Humans have an incredible endurance. In spite of the fact that humans are relatively slow, it has been hypothesized and proven that humans could run up to 40 miles per hour, even though their fastest speed. The fastest living human, Usain Bolt, can run literally only 27. So imagine that, running faster than our prey and running them to death. Sounds pretty fun. I've always been very interested in doing persistence hunting, but I am no ultra runner yet. Getting there, but not there yet. I need longer summers. That's probably it. Cause I get to like 3 mile runs and then it's just like winter hits. Cause it takes a while to get from only being able to do a mile at a time to being able to do 3 miles without stopping. But yeah, another of our unique traits is actually blushing. This was one that was interesting. I thought I'd just add it anyways. While there are many more interesting traits on this list, I thought that blushing was just simply odd. Humans are the only known animal to actually blush, basically. It is still not really understood why humans blush, but it is believed that it occurs to ensure honesty between the members of human groups. That's interesting. I had no idea before this that humans were the only species to blush. The last trait that I can think of that I am putting on here, but there are many others, and I linked the video down in the description article down in the description if you want to listen or read it. But yeah, the last trait that is unique to humans is basically the post-reproductive age. Females of species generally, besides humans specifically, generally reproduce until they die. But with humans, this is not really the case. Human females often live long after ceasing reproduction, which normally ends at menopause or even before then. It is actually believed that grandparent and elder humans of a small society could be seen as as the wise leaders of the groups, as we often see the elder of our population as wise and knowledgeable. These grandparents may be important to small bands of hunter-gatherers or even extended families like farm families, even though they don't really exist anymore, because of their experience with raising children and because of their body of knowledge and because of their knowledge of survival. But yeah, all these unique evolutionary advantages that humans possess are important. Of course they're important. We have some interesting and unusual, profound and unique human characteristics that are not prevalent in other species. So what are they actually, what evolutionary advantage do they actually hold? They actually held a lot of an evolutionary advantage in a way. I mean, our brains worked wonders for us because we could almost darn near manipulate every animal that we were near. And we could also domesticate animals. Like, we had an amazing relationship with wolves before the Neolithic Revolution. We domesticated animals even before we domesticated crops. So that is a testament to our intelligence, even though we still have a meager intelligence compared to the rest of the universe. around 12,000 years ago, and in a relatively simultaneous degree, these small bands of hunter-gatherers began to exploit and domesticate. The Neolithic Revolution, also known as the Agricultural, specifically the First Agricultural Revolution, first occurred in the Fertile Crescent of the Middle East, and around a similar time, within around 2,000 years, occurred in human bands around the world. It is believed that these agricultural revolutions occurred somewhat simultaneously with one another because of a global warming trend that began on Earth around 14,000 years ago, 2,000 years before the rise of agriculture. Now, this warming trend was not like climate change right now. It was like probably 0.0004 degrees every year or something at most. And this is like probably about 0.05 degrees Celsius every year, and I was talking about Fahrenheit in the other one. So obviously it is significantly faster now, but there's definitely a global warming that was occurring back then. Global sea levels were rising, etc., etc., etc. As conditions improved in the Fertile Crescent, wheat and barley actually grew there as the conditions improved. These are two grains that humans love, and they're pretty useful. At this time, humans began to settle in this region, basically somewhat abandoning their nomadic lifestyles. Of course, they're going to be doing that because, remember, this is, they want food. They want to survive, right? It makes sense. But they still traveled out and searched for survival, of course. They didn't fully abandon it. Some humans would later choose an entirely different lifestyle that is unprecedented in all of animal history. They would remain on the fertile lands and attempt to make more crops, more barley, and more wheat. These first sedentary humans would begin a journey from hunting and gathering to large-scale farming that would last hundreds or even thousands of years. Those pioneering humans established a short line of procession, which led them from pure nomadism to small gardens, and then to large fields of growth. As they achieved these last steps, they fomented the groundwork for civilizations and empires. Mesopotamia, Rome, the Roman Empire, the Greek Empire, the Ottoman Empire, the Prussia, Yugoslavia, the Balkan Peninsula. I mean, there are many more. The United States, the United Kingdom, France before and after the French Revolution, China. We have, without agriculture, none of this would have happened. There is probably a 95% chance that whoever is watching this episode right now would not be alive if it weren't, actually probably even higher than that, like 99% chance that you were not alive if it weren't for agriculture. Probably even more than 99%. Probably 99.6%. So that's that. We owe a lot to agriculture, us humans. The first seeds of agricultural creation fomented the growth of civilization simply through the vast increase in food availability and yields. The human population was able to grow beyond its original carrying capacity and eventually, especially as of recently, grow exponentially to a new worldwide carrying capacity, this one in the billions or even potentially in the tens of billions of persons. The Neolithic Revolution was the first of three agricultural revolutions. This is, I mean, if you're taking like AP HUG or like AP Environmental Science, you'll probably know this. It was the first of three. So the Neolithic Revolution is often referred to as the First Agricultural Revolution, while the Agricultural Revolution that occurred in the midst of the Industrial Revolution is often referred to as the Second Agricultural Revolution, and the Green Revolution, which occurred in the second half of the 20th century, is often referred to as the Third Agricultural Revolution. Yeah, I thought that was interesting. I always liked that. That was a fun unit. That was a fun unit in AP HUG. I found an interesting article that surrounds human sexuality. I thought we'd just discuss this. I think it's important that we discuss this because a lot of people seem to not understand what human sexuality is at all. I personally am heterosexual. But I think it is important that we discuss this at least a little bit. I decided that I would add to this episode with a section surrounding the sexuality of humans and other related organisms. As oddly as it may seem to our in our ideologically divided world, homosexuality and bisexuality is not confined merely to humans at all. While homosexuality in its literal definition is confined to merely humans and potentially the sheep, as we know of, bisexuality is not. For example, female macaques, which we are very heavily related to female macaques, often mate with one another, actually, and while they never reproduce, they do achieve their hormonal desire for social sex, of which humans and other apes are the champions. We love, I mean, in most cases, social sex does not exist in many other animals, but for humans and other apes, it definitely does. While homosexuality from an evolutionary and not a social, let me be very, very clear on this, and not a social standpoint is inadequate, mainly because of the fact that it doesn't transfer genes to a new generation, it is still performed often simply because of desire. When it comes to human sexuality, it's just so much more complicated, so much more advanced, because you have these advanced societies, advanced everything. But there have been numerous studies performed that indicate that no matter how accepting a society is of homosexuality, the prevalence of it is about the same. So, like, literally, there's almost no difference. So, really, I think the big thing is it has to do with the brain. It has everything to do with the brain and the hormones released from the brain. Homosexuality in humans seems in a way natural in and of itself. It has been documented that societies in which homosexuality is praised or accepted has the same prevalence of homosexuality as a society in which homosexuality is not praised and admonished. We just spoke about this, and that's basically what it is. Humans crave social sex, and homosexuality seems to be a purely natural exhibit of it. There remains no need to demean another because they exist in a different state from yourself. Do not judge a book by its cover. So now, that's basically it. That's all the learning part we have from this. One species, born from a small and rocky yet beautiful planet orbiting an average star and an average galaxy, finding their way through the expansive universe that is ready to envelop them. Their time on this planet remains limited, as their own actions are to render it uninhabitable in its near future, potentially. Still, this species is very smart, very innovative, and very cunning. 70,000 years ago, their population fell to the small number of a few thousand, rendering them critically endangered, literally, and nearing extinction. The species, in spite of its tumultuous situation, continued on, and as they always have. They could always begin again. As they dawn on a new future of exploration, they must take on the courage and survival of their ancestors, straining to remember the ones who found their way through hardship and the ones who fomented the new, profound journey the species faces as it attempts again to survive from itself. Let this episode be a testament to the fact that we know so little about the world around us, even about ourselves. We know so little about even ourselves. The Greek philosopher Socrates once said, and I quote, "True wisdom comes to each of us when we realize how little we understand about life, ourselves, and the world around us," end quote. We know at best 5% of the oceans, 5% of the brain, and I have to actually go on to my list to look at this. 0.000000000002368% of the observable knowledge that exists in the universe. Obviously, we don't completely know that. We don't know the exact estimates, but we can infer them. Even so, our ignorance of our upbringing and existence is a motivator to persist through the darkness towards the ever-growing light of science and knowledge. And to quote another philosopher by the name of Dr. Seuss, the more, well, begin quote, or quote, and I quote, "The more that you read, the more things you will know, and the more that you learn, the more places you will go. Thank you all for listening. And as always, have a good morning, afternoon, evening, and night. Take care and stay curious."